everybody. Welcome back to Sales is King. Dan Sixsmith, your host, with a special guest today. It's Keenan, the rock star sales influencer, trainer, author, you name it. He's been back with us now. We had him a number of years ago. He's one of the top sales influencers that I follow, and we're so excited to have him here. Keenan, welcome back to the podcast after a few years. How are you, my friend?
Good, my man. Thank you for having me again. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's start with what's going on in kind of the B2B sales space. I'd love to get your take on kind of the state of B2B selling today, because, you know, everything I hear is, you know, selling's getting harder, buyers are getting tougher, deals are getting harder to come by. Certainly the economy isn't great, but how would you characterize kind of the macroeconomic state, what you're seeing out there?
I think sales screwed itself. So for that, I don't know, call it 10 years, 7 years, 8 years, I don't know how long you want to call it, but for at least 5 or 6, 7 years, sales just over-indexed on, you know, sales enablement tools and sales efficiency tools, and just blitzed and barraged, that's probably the right word, buyers with shitty emails and shitty cold calls, and they could do it at scale. I mean, you know, send out cadences with hundreds and not thousands of people every day, and then they could just keep hitting them and hitting them, but just really turned buyers off. Buyers were like, I'm not answering the phone. I'm not going to read this email. I'm just going to hit delete. I'm going to hit delete. And, you know, so they, what's the word I'm looking for? Isolated.
I know what you're trying to say.
Not isolated.
They turned buyers off.
They turned buyers off. This word, alienated.
That's
yes, they've alienated buyers, and buyers have had it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's what's happened. You know, I don't think very many people know how to sell anymore. And a lot of sales organizations don't want to hear that because things are relative. Like, if you buy in relativity, if all of a sudden I were to wipe out the top 50% of the most talented athletes in every single sport, it wouldn't take long for us to see that 49.99 is now the superstar. And we would forget that person actually sucks. And I think that's what we've seen in sales, is there really aren't that many good salespeople left, or we haven't really developed any new good salespeople. And so although they may do well in this relative environment today compared to their other peers and et cetera, but when you sit and you listen and you watch them sell and you evaluate their actually selling approach, it's medium at best, and buyers are fed up with it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's so curious because there's so much research out there, right, in terms of what buyers want, but yet, you know, the salespeople and the sales leaders let them go out and just dump all this garbage all over the place, almost to the point of where, when you see a good seller, you're like, oh, wow, you know, this guy really knows his stuff. And I guess, you know, why are there just so many bad sellers? Why aren't, you know, why isn't the message getting through? I mean, I've read your book. I listened to all your videos about, you know, impactful discovery and being a strategic consultant and finding a problem worth solving. Why aren't more companies and sellers doing this?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I really don't. I think ego plays a role. I believe they keep trying to double down on the, you know, on the tech tools and enablement, and trying to, you know, push more evaluation of the process and the activity and the checking of the boxes. And did you do this? And did you do that? And there really isn't a clear definition of what their organizational methodology is. So I don't even think enough people have actually been dedicated to a clear selling methodology that's repeatable, understandable, and easily articulated to the entire team. And that's at the skill level, right? And then from the skill level, when you move up to the opportunity management layer, you're not taking those skills, embedding them into the opportunity management process, and not providing avenues and tools and training for the middle managers, the frontline managers, to evaluate how the reps are executing the methodology within the actual opportunities that they're responsible for. So it's sort of like I'll teach someone how to pick up a curveball in baseball, right? I'll teach somebody how to identify a curveball. I'll teach them how to hit a curveball. I'll teach them how to be patient when they see a curveball coming. I'll teach them how to based on the rise of the curve, to anticipate, is it going to into the strike zone, not strike into strike zone, when to lay off, when to lean in, right? I teach you all of that. And I teach you all that during practice every day, right? But then if I don't create within the game scenario a way to evaluate how you're applying what I've taught you in the game, and then assess how well you do that in the game, and then provide feedback for the next game, or better yet, for your next at bat, never mind that, your next at bat, then I'm failing, right? And this is easy metaphor in sports because we just gravitate to sports much easier. It's easier. It's more of a meritocracy, more performance-based, not much gray area. But in the sales world, very few people even think about the opportunity layer, right? They basically think you teach someone the skills, it will automatically translate into the selling process. And they have very few approaches, methods, processes, et cetera, to actually manage the opportunity layer against the skills they taught. So I think that's the biggest one right there. They're very disjointed and disconnected. If they even have skills that they teach that are common, right, a common methodology, a common set of skills, there's even a common skills platform, which many don't have, they don't tie it to the opportunity layer to reinforce it and see if it's actually being used and assess and teach which reps are really good at it, which aren't, where do you need to improve, what feedback can I provide, and get them better at it. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. And then it's like the whole notion of coaching, right, which it just seems that's really what you're talking about, right? It's just, how do we...
Actually, there's a difference, right? So you kind of just fell into the trap. Go back to the baseball game. I can coach you every practice, right? I'm coaching you. You go to the game. The game is over. We come back, right? I was like, oh, you didn't hit as well. Let's go back to coaching you on picking up the curveball. But what I didn't do in the analogy that I'm using is I didn't watch how you address the curveball during the game. Right? I didn't see you in action in the game. I'm watching you do it here in practice, but it's not a game scenario. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't know if there's somebody on first base. I don't know if the pitcher is, I don't know what inning it is. Like, all that plays a role in a baseball player's ability to be good, right? In practice, I know you're going to throw me a curveball. I know it's coming, right? Or you may try to mix it up, but it's all in practice. So that's what I'm saying here. There's plenty of coaching, but it's not coaching in general. It's coaching at the opportunity layer. Pull the two apart. Skills layer is enablement. I'm teaching you the skills. I'm reinforcing the skills. I'm evaluating if you understand the skills. I'm giving you practice in the skills. That's that, right? Now, the opportunity layer, Dan, is when I'm actually looking at a live opportunity. It's a real opportunity. It's in the pipeline. Show me what I'm doing at that layer to look at and say, okay, these are the skills we've been taught, and these are the information we told you to get. These are things you're supposed to do in a sale. Where is it? Where is it? I don't see it, right? I don't see the information we got. I don't see how you engaged them. I don't see how you did this. So I can't attach to the opportunity and help improve your chance of closing while the opportunity is open, because I don't have the processes. I don't have the tools. I don't have the Salesforce or HubSpot properly built to reinforce the skill set. See what I did there? That's so I'm not actually doing that. So it's not just coaching in general. It's actually providing feedback and coaching at the opportunity layer for each individual opportunity to see across 10 of these. I did a good job over here for 2, a horrible job for these 5, and a medium job for these 6. What's the common theme across all of these that I'm not applying that is repeatable, that you've been taught, so I can help you get better in the opportunity and win the opportunity?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like going back over the, well, you got to be coaching during the game, but if you're not, going over the game film and watching them in action, right? So probably like the conversational intelligence type solutions, where you can actually watch the recorded calls and then make comments.
See, this is, this is interesting. You're actually demonstrating why we have the problem.
Yeah.
So if I watch you after the game, so the way we do it here at ASG is we have, we call it the sales acceleration success model, right? Or the sales execution success model, sorry, right? And so basically what we realize is three layers to ensuring you're executing in a sales organization. One is the skills layer, and that's skills by itself. So if I have some type of gong, if I have anything that allows me to watch a call after the fact, that's skills development and management, right? But if I'm not taking that and attaching it to a very specific opportunity and evaluating how are you executing the methodology for this opportunity, for this one, right? Mm-hmm. What is missing? What aren't you doing? What information have you not gathered? What steps are you not executing at this opportunity? Not after the fact, not on a call, in this very opportunity. We don't manage at the opportunity layer. So the opportunity layer is the layer that says I'm managing each and individual opportunity to close. And I got
moving it down, moving it through the flow to close.
Yes. Attached. Watch what I do. Attached to the skill level. What we do is we separate them and then we kind of jump back and forth. We don't actually drive the skill into the opportunity and assess, hey, has Tommy actually seeing the curveball this game? Because this pitcher has struck him out twice. If he doesn't get it, I'm taking him out of the game, or I'm showing him this film before the next time he gets a bat. This isn't skill development right now. This is execution development.
Right.
You see the difference?
Right. Yeah. Like we don't deal do navigation. That. Right.
Yes. Right. We don't do that. We don't do that in real opportunity time. And then we wonder why the deals aren't closing, because we're not connecting the skills training to where it's actually playing out at the opportunity level across the entire sales process for each individual deal. I know it seems nuanced, but it's actually pretty powerful.
No, it makes sense, right? Because there's two different things there. And I think, you know, you're hitting on that, like who, how do you navigate the deal properly? Who are you bringing in? Are you bringing in the right people? And, you know, garnering support, getting the buying committee, multi-threading, all that good stuff, right? So, you know, that's one of the things what we see some of the good sellers, you know, doing well, right? And being able to bring in the right people as the quarterback. So, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. So what else is, tell us what else is kind of trending. You know, I saw you did a video on, you were thinking that there's too many tools out there, and you're seeing sellers kind of, you know, using it more as a crutch and looking for a silver bullet. Is that something you're seeing a lot more of, and a lot less kind of hustle out there and rolling up of the sleeves?
No, I wouldn't say I'm seeing more of it. It's pretty much stagnant. I think some companies may be pulling back, but that leads back to, it's been a crutch. So people aren't being taught to sell. They're not being taught to sell. And here's the other one too, I think that's interesting for large organizations, not smaller ones. Smaller ones are victim of just their size. And the enablement's not going to like this very much. But I think there's a massive disconnect between enablement and the sales team.
Oh, yeah.
Rarely. So enablement, listen to me. You can call me names, or you can learn something here. Rarely does enablement understand the key metrics the sales organization is trying to achieve. And if they do, they don't know what they are as far as where they're at. When we sell to enablement, rarely can enablement actually tell us what is the current quota attainment, what is that in comparison to where you want to be in the next 1, 3, 5 years, and or what was it 1 to 3, 5 years ago. They can't tell us what the win rates are. It amazes me, almost nobody can tell us. Win rates is one of the most difficult things for us to get, and I do not understand, but particularly with inside of sales enablement. They don't know what the win rate is, right? Then the next piece is average sales cycle. They can usually guess that, but it's usually – they're kind of offers like, well, it's kind of, you know, and well, it depends on the type of deal and blah, blah, blah. And then finally, the average contract value. They don't know, and they certainly don't know it in from a trend perspective, and they haven't really given any set of goals or metrics, the what we call best of breed or you know, desired output for those stats. So I'm thinking to myself, your enablement, this is your job. You're running around buying tools, buying sales training, et cetera, but you don't know where you are today and what you're trying to get to tomorrow. You haven't really built a business case. They're very keen on the root causes. Oh, our sales team can't do discovery. Oh, our sales team doesn't get to the economic buyer. Oh, our sales team doesn't. Very, very in tune with the root causes and those, you know, those what we call technical problems, but they don't really have a real good connection to the actual metrics that matter. It's, again, it's sort of like being a general manager of a baseball team. You're like, my team, man, they're terrible hitters and they can't pick up the curveball and they, though, they are they're horrible fielders and all that, but has no idea what his team's at batting average is, has no idea what his team's on-base percentage is, has no idea what their win record is. They know that the team makes lots of errors, make too many errors, right? They know that the team strikes out too much. You see what I'm saying? But he doesn't actually know the and so he said, I need more players that don't strike out. And I assume he's going to come in and help us improve our fielding, but doesn't actually know what their current fielding average is, doesn't currently know what the batting average is, doesn't know what their win-loss is. So that's what I deal with, and we see a lot with enablement. So when you're that disconnected, how do you fix it? You keep running around paying for training, you keep running around paying for new tools, you keep running around putting in new processes, you build really fancy charts, you build playbooks, but you don't actually attach it to the metrics that matter, and then you don't understand what metrics are you missing and why are you missing them.
Yeah. No, that's
You're like, whoa, yeah.
No, it's true. What's... Is anybody doing it well? Who are you working with that's getting it today? What type of organizations are putting this all together?
It's too anecdotal. I mean, we have obviously customers that we work very close with. We work really hard to help them get it. So the one here, I'll do it this way. I'll do it, Brunson. Yeah. The companies that are getting it are the companies that recognize that the things that matter besides quota, a win rate, average contract value or average sales price, and average time to close or average sales cycle time. Those people recognize that and then do their sales team assessments based on what's causing those to be down. Why is our contract? So let's say it's negotiation. We found out that our average contract value is down is because of negotiation. Then they say, well, why are we negotiating so much? And they determine that they're negotiating too much because the team gets caught in these competitive situations and the competitors drop the pants. It's a drop to map them. And they say, well, why don't they just hold their price? Well, they haven't hold their price because they don't understand why customers should buy in the first place. They did a feature dump. Well, why did they do a feature dump? Because they don't know how to do a good discovery. Oh, five whys. We need to teach some discovery. So we're going to go teach some discovery because we properly diagnosed the problem. This is the issue with most sales organizations. They are terrible at diagnosing the problem. So they just throw shit around thinking they're fixing it. I'll give you a perfect example. And I never won this business. I won't use the name of the company, but it's a massive Fortune 50, I think. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was meeting with the global worldwide head of sales enablement. Worldwide head of sales name, and this place had like 5,000 sales reps all over the world. Okay. We were talking and we were doing a traditional gap selling discovery at a sales growth company. We believe we, in gap selling in particular, we believe we solve four business problems. That's it. And it's the ones I keep mentioning. We believe we solve the problem of not making quota or revenue goals, the problem of having too long sales cycles, the problem of low win rates, or the problem of low contract value. Or average sales price. Those are the only four problems we solve. Now, within those problems, there are a bazillion root causes. Team's not properly sold. Team lacks business acumen. Team can't do discovery. Team can't get to the buying person. The team can't overcome objections. Like, team can't close. Like, there's just a million root causes. Do you see where I'm going? That any one of those exists. You tracking with me, Dan? Okay, it's almost infinite, the number of root causes, right? So I'm asking this woman what her win rate is. She doesn't know. I ask what the close rate is. She doesn't know. She goes, but none of that matters. She literally said this. I'll never forget it. She goes, I know what the problem is. And I go, what's the problem? And she said, the problem is more and more and more of our buyers are coming out of the business side of the house, not the technical. So as you can tell, this is a technical company, hardware company. Okay. So we need our salespeople to be better at talking to the business buyers. So I said, could you please define that? What do you mean better at talking about it? Well, she says they've been trained too long and they're too focused on bits and bytes and RAM and blah, 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 right? And all this stuff. Right. And when they go to the business side couldn't give a shit. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But I said, because of this, how has it affected the business? She goes, well, you know, we're having a hard time making these sales, et cetera. I said, okay. So are you missing quota? I'll say, I'm going to give you the benefit of it because I don't know. She said, no. I said, okay, well, are you finding that deals are taking longer? I don't know. What's your win rate, right? I don't know. Are you seeing the discounting more? I don't know. And I said, well, the reason I'm asking these questions is because I don't want to take your business if you don't have a problem. It's because I just told, this is what she said, I just told you what the problem was. She was getting a bit indignant, getting irritated with me. The problem mm-hmm. is our team can't sell to the business side. And I very casually, she had a bunch of people on the line. I said, I understand that, Jennifer. But why do you think it's a problem that they can't sell to the business if you don't know these metrics? Because right. it seems to me, Jennifer, that if your quota is continuing, if average sales price is growing, and all that's set in the right direction, then it's not a
Who
problem.
Cares? Right.
unless you're telling me you're afraid there's going to be a intersection point, right, where it will start to go down and you're trying to get ahead of it. And she just wouldn't let go. And I think by this time she was felt outed by me and her little minions were, you know what I'm saying, were all there. And she lost her shit.
Yeah, I've been on calls like that.
Yeah, she lost her shit. So this is my point. We know what problems we solve here. We know what we're trying to find. And we try to find that with customers so that we can help them understand or diagnose their own problem. And most companies do not know how to teach their salespeople to diagnose and enablement. Generally speaking, is not set up to teach the people to diagnose. And that's the number one thing they should be teaching them to do.
Yeah. I mean, we see it. We see it a lot. I mean, we're in the enablement space and value selling. We're, you know, so I see our value selling very similar to your, you know, your gap selling. It's focusing on challenges and pain. Mm-hmm. You know, it's finding a problem worth solving. It's also talking about the status quo and the cost of the status quo and the risk of the status quo. And then it's quantifying the value. Mm-hmm. Once you've been able to get them, you know, to buy into that, then, you know, why should I spend $1 million? What's my return on investment? And all of that. And it's very hard to get that across to folks that have been technical sellers. You know, the buyers today want this. And so, you know, I feel you. It's, you know, we sell tools and platforms and things that help, you know, sellers communicate this effectively, but adopting it is always a big challenge because they're just used to doing things their own way. I think psychologically, I'd like to get your take on it, but it's a lot easier to talk about me and my solution and my company and our logos and the founder and all of this stuff. But maybe it's just not as easy to ask insightful questions. I mean, it shouldn't be rocket science, right? But do the research, ask insightful questions, be a strategic advisor, subject matter expert, and then position yourself and talk about the business value, right? And I think that's a lot of what you talk about in gap selling, no? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The problem is, when you talk about your product, I don't care what the situation is, if before you've done proper discovery and before you've properly diagnosed the problem, you're leaving it to the buyer to evaluate whether or not they should buy. They're figuring it out. You're not. You're basically giving a bunch of puzzle pieces and the buyer's putting them together. A really, really good seller who sells by telling just is really good at delivering the pieces in a way that it becomes easier for the buyer to put the puzzle together. But they don't know why the buyer needs to put the puzzle together. They don't know which pieces of the puzzle are most important to the buyer. They just happen to be good enough to lay out the pieces in a way that the buyer could put it together faster for themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay. What organizations don't understand is it's too difficult for them, for whatever particular reason, to stop and flip the script and start to educate themselves or enablement to start evaluating themselves from the buyer's perspective. What are the two or three? I'm going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to potentially embarrass myself. Or I'm going to crush this. Okay.
So that Dan, never happened.
Dan, pick any type of business, any type of business.
B2B SaaS.
Okay, that's not a business. That's a platform. That's not a business. See what we do? That is SaaS. SaaS is simply the distribution of a software from a remote cloud place. It's not a business, right? So give me an actual business, any type of business.
The NBA.
Oh, interesting. Okay, the NBA. So if you want to sell something to the NBA, give me another. So NBA is who I'm selling to. Now give me a business that would sell to the NBA.
I don't know. The uniforms company.
The uniform company. Okay. So now if I'm a uniform company and I'm trying to get the NBA contract, or all the NBA contracts, or better yet, it's not just the NBA. It's going to be every professional and semi-professional and college sports, right? Any sports organization. So can we agree on that? If I'm a uniform maker, it's not just going to be just the NBA, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Just roughly, what do you think? Name two or three things that a sports organization is going to struggle with when it comes to their uniforms that they will use as a guide on who they pick to get their uniforms.
What do they struggle with in wearing the uniforms?
In general, just in general.
Yeah, I mean, comfort. I don't know. Comfort.
You said, I don't know. Right there. And I don't expect you to know.
Right.
Because you're not in the industry. But what I would expect is the uniform company to know, and not the uniform company to say they want this, they want that, but the other way around.
Right.
Currently, see what I'm doing here?
Do you have an issue with ABC?
And so what they don't do is they don't go out there and teach their salespeople what the schools, what the MBA, what the colleges, what the local soccer clubs, right? What they're struggling with when it comes to uniforms. And so they don't teach them that. They don't teach them what the decision criteria or the evaluation criteria is to determine whether or not I need uniforms, who would I pick, what am I looking for, how would I define success. So because they don't teach them any of that, they go out there and they don't know how to have a conversation about it. Right? And so if I'm talking to a soccer club of kids between 7 and 17, right? One of the problems they may have is kids with a whole bunch of different sizes, right? Because kids are in all different stages of growing. And so therefore the kids order the wrong ones and they can't return them fast because they thought it was this. So one of the things they're going to say is do you have a problem with kids not getting their uniforms in time for the season because they guess wrong on the size because of the varying size of the kids growing so fast? So the uniform comes, it's a very poor return policy with the people using now. So it takes forever to get it back. And the kids are all in different uniforms in that first two or three games. Oh my God, it happens all the time. We can't stand it. Sometimes kids get the same numbers. See what I did right there? Right? See what I did? I went to, do you hate it when this happens? And like, yes. So, but they don't teach them to ask, do you not like when this happens? Because they don't even think that that could be a problem that particular group of people they're selling to has. Do you see where I'm going, Dan? They don't teach them that. They teach them about how they make the best uniforms and they're cheap to the kids.
Quality and right.
Yep. So that's my point. They don't teach them the buyer side and world. They don't educate them on being an expert on what it's like to manage and deal with NBA uniforms. And maybe in that one, they only wear the same uniform once a game. I don't know. But maybe that's it. So they don't understand the issues of making sure that it's replenished regularly. You know, again, I'm on my skis because I don't know. But they don't teach them that.
That's okay.
So the salesperson can't go in and start having a dialogue about the buyer's current state. They go in and they start talking about the features and functions of the actual product they sell. They don't teach them to have a conversation about the environment that they're in, why that environment is not optimal, what's causing that environment, and get in and say, that we hate that.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's probably why the whole no decision thing is continuing to increase, right? Thanks. This was a great meeting. And then poof, I disappear because, you know, you just didn't deliver any value. You just talked about your stuff and, you know, you didn't solve my issue or even talk about the things that I really wanted to solve or to get me to move away from what I'm doing today.
You didn't
I'm
even
happy
help
doing
me.
What I'm
you,
doing.
You didn't even identify why I should change. You didn't identify what my problem was.
Right. So, like, you know, I don't know, you know, and then what happens is you get new sellers and you don't teach them properly. Right. And then they go to become, you know, older sellers that are still not great. And then we have this armies of people out there, like on LinkedIn and everywhere else, just, you know, spewing garbage everywhere and making it difficult for, as you said at the beginning, you know, the good sellers to try and get through. Because now we've built up this defense as a buyer that every seller is of zero, low value. That's why we see the studies that say B2B buyers want a rep-free experience. They'd love to yes. just go online and assemble some stuff and click buy, and I don't want to deal with you. So, you know, I don't know. You know, it's just, it would be great if we could spread the gospel a little bit more and start executing better. But it looks like it's a big ship to turn around here to start getting better execution and a better reputation for sellers, you know? Yep. I've been in sales a long time. You have too. I'm proud of it, but it's like sometimes people think it's, you know, it's just got a bad reputation, unfortunately.
It does.
My guest on the last show, you know, similar kind of function as you, but I asked him why there's so many bad sellers. And he said, it's a career default. People just kind of wind up in sales.
Yes.
They don't necessarily say, I want to be in sales, but all of a sudden they're in sales and they don't know what they're doing and they're out there kind of, you know, winging it. So
that's
I don't know, man.
I don't think that's unique to sales.
Yeah.
I bet if you were to go and interview the marketing department, yeah. I bet less than 30 or 40% of them said, I went to school for marketing and I wanted to get into marketing. I bet if you go into HR, easy. Easy. 70-80% of those people do not say, I want to go into HR.
No.
They got into a company and got into HR.
Yeah.
I bet same thing with operations. I would bet less than 50% said, I want to be in operations, right? And even within things like tech, they may have gone into tech, but they weren't expecting to be doing what they're doing in tech. So most people end up in their position by default anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be. I think you're right. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned marketing. What's, I don't know. I'm hearing a lot of complaints, you know, I think this is like, you know, sellers always want more leads, but, do you think the marketing function is in trouble in B2B? Do you think they're delivering enough value? Do they have to change up the way they're trying to bring in, you know, inbounds and things? Just curious of what you're seeing out there in your travels.
I do. I think two things are going on. One is joint ownership and the other one is single. I don't think marketing mm-hmm. and sales are connected enough. Mm-hmm. I don't think marketing understands the same problem sales have. And I do not think marketing understands the buyer well enough at all. I don't think the marketing understands the issues and challenges that buyers are dealing with. I hate to use the term, but what keeps buyers up at night, what their environment looks like, what their metrics are, what happens if they don't meet that metrics, what are the underpinning elements or what we call root causes or drivers of those metrics, what goes wrong in an organization that could undermine the metrics. I don't think marketing has any clue about that stuff. None. And when they do, mm-hmm. I don't really think they truly understand it. So that lack of that plus lack of working together is one big problem. I think the second big problem in marketing today is I don't think marketing is very creative anymore. B2B. Mm-hmm. Look, I think we're in with all of the challenges to outbound, and all of the issues and challenges we're having with salespeople and SDRs being able to generate leads through calling and, you know, all that stuff. The way you win that war right now is being unbelievably creative in the type of content you use, the messages you create, for lack of a better word, the downloads, the interactive content that gets people's attention, how you leverage engaging material, how you, what you teach, the educational elements of content. I think they've lost all level of creativity around content. And I think they're just, everybody's starting to look and feel the same.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was reading something where, B2B buyers are saying they want B2C type experiences. You know, they want, we call it, it's interesting. We call it the, the weekend versus the weekday experience. So we made a big investment in UI and user experience. And, you know, the weekend experience is, you know, Disney, Hulu, Netflix, right? And all these interesting, rich applications. And then Monday morning, we flip open, you know, Salesforce and charts and white space and everything else, right? So that's very, very uninteresting. So yeah, I agree with you. And the other thing too, is I think a lot of the marketing content is, you know, internally focused too, right? Here's what we do. Here's the thing, how it works. Here's the, and it's not answering the challenges. It's not going after the pain points and the issues, right? So I think, I agree 100%. And the type of content really needs to get your, get you engaged, right? If you look at some of these rich websites in, when you go on e-commerce sites and, you know, the longer you spend on the site, the greater the chance you're going to spend money, right? So think about building a website or a landing page and getting that buyer engaged to spend a lot more time and to be able to see videos. And I don't know, but I'm with you. I'm not sure where B2B marketing is going. But it's gotta really raise its game a little bit.
I think it needs way more creativity, way more.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have a lot of time left, but I'd love to just hear your story real quick. I don't know that everybody's heard it. I certainly have followed you, but just quickly, you know, where did you start? How did you get into the current role you're in, and where do you want to go from here? I'd love to hear that.
Really? You think that's interesting to people?
I do.
What makes it interesting to you?
Well, it first of all, it's interesting to me because I follow you, and I think you've got a lot of great knowledge. But I'd love to know kind of, I think you started in sales, but why did you get into more of the training part of it? Why do you find that more rewarding than maybe doing what you were doing before? And then is there a next act? Where are you looking to take this kind of Keenan? What's Keenan 2.0? Or is it just keep on keeping on?
Well, I don't know that I like training better than what I was doing before. I mean,
okay.
I got into sales and sold for a while and then moved to management and then executive management, mm-hmm. or executive leadership, whatever you want to call it. And then went out and started a consulting company called Sales Guy, because it was after my blog. Mm-hmm. Just took the name mm-hmm. of my blog and threw a consultant.
That's right. You started writing and just, I remember you telling me you were just writing and putting blogs out there. And then finally it started to catch on, right? Mm-hmm. But you just kept at it.
Yeah. 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 So started the consulting company, was a solo guy for, I don't know, 8-7 years doing most of the work myself. I tried adding a recruiting element to it. Didn't work mm-hmm. out. So I went back mm-hmm. to doing it myself. And then in that process, from a consulting perspective, you know, on a retainer, for lack of a better word, you know, I'd go mm-hmm. out and work companies. I could usually carry about 4 or 5 companies at a time and would make, mm-hmm. you know, X a month. And it was good for one guy, but I was getting busy. And so I had an assistant and she started helping. And then I had a sales guy and he, you know, kept me busy, but I realized it couldn't scale past me. At right about that same time, I had a client ask me to put together training. I said, I don't do training. People ask me all the time, will you do training? And I'm like, no, because I'm not going to rehash the same stupid training everybody else puts out there. They can just go. I didn't see a competitive differentiator. I was like, they can go buy Sandler or go buy Challenger, go buy whatever they want. Like, I don't have anything that's competitive different. I'm going to help you holistically with your whole sales org. And then through all of that effort and through the blogging and through my notes and through the consulting and support that I gave my clients, I started to see a theme. And that's basically where Gap Selling came from. So once I figured out what the thesis was to Gap Selling, then I just had to write the book. But I realized, and I was smart enough to understand that, look, I'm not going to bullshit anybody here. Not that I like training more or less. Training is just far more lucrative and far more scalable, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's mm-hmm. way easier to train, you know, 500 people in a 90-day period, you know, at, you know, $1,000 to $1,500 a person than it is to consult, right? I mean, you can't command that kind of money from a consulting perspective. So Mm-hmm. I added the training element, and now we do both consulting and training. And it's, plus we offer more value. And I bought a software company, so we've added that into it. So, you know, so we have, nice. We can address the whole thing. And where are we going? I mean, we're just going to continue to grow. Our mantra, because not a tagline, our mantra is change the way the world sells. You started this whole mm-hmm. conversation off, this whole podcast off, with sales in trouble and salespeople need to get better at selling. And they've isolated and alienated the buyers. And we've recognized that. So we literally want to mm-hmm. change the way people sell for their sake and the buyer's sake.
Yeah, man.
So, you know, look, now we have multiple certified trainers. We have a licensing division. People come in and they get trained from us in an over 90-day period. And then they have to go through certification steps. It is no joke to become a gap selling certified trainer. But when they do, they go out and they build their own business around gap selling, and we feed them leads. And so we're just going to continue to grow that way.
I love it. It's like almost like a franchise kind of
licensing
model.
Yep.
Yeah. Similar to a couple of others out there that I've seen. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome, man. That's really, really good.
Thank you.
I find that, you know, and I congratulate you on it. I've always been a big fan of yours. Last question. You know, AI, right? I had a guest on. She went out and got her master's in AI, and now she's writing a blog, and that's how she gets business. And people, they call her in, and she says the biggest mistake you can make today in regards to AI is sit and wait. That you need to be in it and kind of rolling up your sleeves and figuring it out. How do you see it, and how are you guys leveraging it today?
I would like to talk to this woman and have her define in it. we're not in it. Not because I don't, I'm not in it because I don't believe it's ready. Now, here's why. Well, I told you we bought a software application, right?
Yeah.
And it's called Node Analytics. And one of the things we do, it's not a commercial for Node, so I'm not going to walk through the whole thing. If someone wants to know, call me or whatever, and I'll walk you through it. One of the things Node does is it makes it 10,000 times easier for a sales rep to get information into Salesforce during a call. So we have multiple ways of doing it, right? One is you just take random notes on a blank piece of paper or a blank screen, just like a Google Doc. But then we can tag that information and put it in very specific fields that match your methodology instantly. So let's just say you're a medic shop instead of gap selling, so you're a medic shop. You're taking your notes, and when you're done taking notes, all you have to do is read them and then highlight and put M, and then you can put E, and then you can put C, and then C, or it would have to be C and CH, whatever, right? That would tell the application that goes in the metrics field, this one goes into the economic buyer field, right? And so now your notes are categorized by your methodology, so management can go in and see what's missing and what's not missing, right? Back to the opportunity layer management that I talked about, imagine the power in that. You go look at a deal, and you're not looking at a stream of shit you got to read for 20 minutes. You go to the five medic fields, and you read them, and like, well, that sucks. That's good. That sucks. Go get more, right? So my point in that is we have all of that that allows you to do it, but then to make it even easier, we capture the transcript from a call, from a Zoom call. We capture the transcript, and then we pull it right in next to your notes, right? So then you can see it, and then you can highlight the transcript and send it to the specific. So you don't have to take the note. You can go, or you can take notes and go over and say, oh, that's what they said. Highlight that. Again, put the M the E, and then it sends it, right? It sends it straight to the field again. Well, we tried using AI to learn over time what information was relevant in that transcript. So now I don't have to say that's a metric. It would literally say, hey, here's the transcript. And Keenan, we believe these sayings, because it is metrics, we believe this is the economic buyer. We believe. Right? Horrible failure. The amount of fucking data AI needed and the amount of work AI needed to make this work was a fucking joke. It was a fucking, it was so overwhelming. And we had some really impressive AI people that, we just need more data. What did fucking stop. I've been at this for 4 months. No, it is not. Oh, it is too nuanced. This fucking computer is never going to be able, at least not right now, be able to say, let me see. My ACV is at this and it needs to be at this. It could not pick that up and recognize that that is current state and this is future state and here's the gap, no matter how fucking hard we try, because it's still in a very binary situation. Do you know what I'm saying? AI is still very binary. It does not play in the gray. So it's great for binary transactions. Phenomenal. And this whole idea of the natural language, great. All that does is go out and pull shit that's already written to answer your question. It's not actually thinking. It's not literally interpreting information from a thought process, right? So my point is, as it relates to sales, we're a long way away, and I don't have that kind of time. Someone will come out with something. Now, if you want to win that race and be an owner in AI, you got to be on top of it so you can come out with the first app. But if you want to use AI to help your business and you're doubling down on this right now, I think you're wasting time. Here's a good example. Great example. I go out to write on LinkedIn and it says, you help use AI. I want to delete that. Get that fucking out of here. I don't want AI being my voice. AI is not going to write a better article than me, ever. Not in my lifetime, at least not in the next 10 or 15 years. There is no way AI is going to write a bad article. So I'm not going to press it. It's embarrassing.
I've pressed the button and I'm unimpressed.
Yeah, no shit. You know? I'm not surprised.
Right? It's just like, it's not good.
No.
You know, and it's really like if you're lazy, you know, you just throw a few words out and like let AI finish it.
Thank you.
You know, and that's what. That's the downside of AI, right? Like just, you know, you do it, man.
The quality
of
content.
Figure out what I'm saying.
Quality of output goes down. Completely goes down.
Yeah. Like, I mean, so I write a blog and I do leverage ChatGPT here and there to help a little bit, you know, with the idea, with the frame and stuff like that.
But that's natural language, right? Yeah, that's not building the fucking your idea. Right. No, it's research. Yeah. I think it's good because it's binary. It's research.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we got a ways to go. But I'll connect you with her anyway. You guys should meet. You could see what she's up to. But smart lady. Well, listen, man, this was great. It's always a pleasure to have you. I love your stuff. Really, you know, I wish you well, continued success, and you know, come back again. And you've got a lot of fans in our organization, and I know a bunch of people have read the Gap Selling book, and I always send people your way and always forward your videos and your content. I get, you got to do some more videos. I love your videos.
I know it's been a
You've
long
been
time,
busy,
huh?
You know,
it's been a
yeah,
long time.
I usually will catch them at night and I see you out there, and it's usually a good rant, you know, and keeps people on their toes, you know, and it's good engaging content. So
thank you, sir.
Keep it up. Keep up the good work, my friend. And, we'll talk to you soon. And thanks so much for coming on.
I got you, baby. My pleasure. Anytime.
Peace. Be good, my friend. Talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody. See you next time on Sales is King.